You're good to go.
Yeah, I'm good to go.
All right. Well, hello everybody, and welcome to the Talk to Danielle podcast. I am your host, Danielle C. Baker. And before we get started, be sure to like, follow, and subscribe to whichever channel you're listening or watching from. And of course, this is season three, so I do invite you to have a look at the two previous seasons. There might be some episodes there that resonate with you with your reality for today. We're going to jump right in. I have Ricardo Wilkins with me today. We're going to be talking about this is what I live for, so I'm really excited about this one. We're talking about our kids and play and learning through play and getting to really know our children and how they learn through play. Ricardo has a beautiful boy. It's just such a it's so nice to see him grow. And Ricardo really got into watching his son play and discovering what kind of person or how he learns. So I want to put the spotlight on you, Ricardo. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Danielle. It's a pleasure to be on your podcast the second time.
That's
This
right.
time talking about a subject that has really inspired me, like you mentioned, and really just motivated me to show up just in a unique and different way than I have really my whole life. It's interesting. I was thinking about it. The first time I was on your podcast was about three years ago. 3 years ago, we had just found out my partner was pregnant, and we were in Ecuador, I believe. So here we are, 3 years later.
I know. I was just going to mention that if anybody was listening or watching, to go into season one, you will see Ricardo's first episode there, talking about the work that you did, because fatherhood is a whole other career when you get into it. But yeah, it's just incredible how in a span of three, it feels like a lifetime ago. And I know for you, being right in there with a toddler, you really don't, that's a whole lifetime. But talk to us about how it's been, how your experience has been as a father.
We were just talking before we got on, and about how I had to, change my activity, my workout routine, and because how taxing it is. So I would say for me, being a father has been, it's so rewarding. And I don't want to use the word hard. People use that word, it can be hard, but I will say demanding. It's been very demanding on, mentally, physically. However, it's been such a learning process for me, and really shifting how I see myself, how I see the world through my son's eyes, and by really delving into play, as I start learning about the science of child development and the neuroscience and what's best for them and the first few years of life, and in adolescence and as a teenager, how important play is, and how if we can show up for our children in play, in different facets to that can really shape their future in a lot of positive ways. And I believe this for me has really made it, while still demanding, less demanding, and can shape the connection that we have with our children, because that's what all I've learned, is that our children are really just looking for, to feel safe and connected with us. And play is a wonderful arena to do that.
Yeah, and you're right, because play, and then that goes right up through adulthood. Like, we forget to play, or we stop playing after a while, and it hurts us as human beings, because we are meant to play. It's what we are. And I had read somewhere as well that where the how can I say this? Like, the cure to trauma is play, because it just plays it, like you were saying, the neuroscience behind it. I find that really interesting. But I love your, because we've had so many conversations and the texts about questions that you had, and I like how you just, like, you have to go all in as a parent, even when you are tired or you're thinking of a million and one things. Getting into your child's world, it does save time, because now you really know your child. You don't have to guess what might be bothering them or what may be going on. So I like that you say, you have to be all in. It is exhausting. You're always tired, but it's a kind of a short-term investment for really long-term benefits. Can you talk to me? Because you talked about getting into your child's world, and you talk about surrendering a lot and investing, investing now. Can you walk us through your mindset on that and how you navigate
I
that?
can. Yeah, that's been a quite a journey for me in learning, like you said, to surrender, to slow down. Just for the listeners, a quick, backstory. When we first interviewed me and my partner were living as nomads. We had been about a year and a half. We were living as nomads, and that was going to be our life indefinitely. This is a dream. At the same time, I had a business. I was working on a book. At the time, that's why you interviewed me about my book, about a whole area of science and a product related to that. And that was my focus. And here we are. We get surprised. She's pregnant. And it was a really sh a big shift. We had to find a place to live. And the first few, I didn't know anything about kids. I kind of wanted kids, but I was living this life. I'm older. So I was like, okay, that's probably not going to happen. And I didn't know anything about kids. And honestly, I was terrified. I was really scared. I didn't know what that meant, how my life was going to change. I never had to take care of another person. And but my son was born, it just kind of like intuitively just fell into it. And then I start diving into, but at the same time, I was still trying to work my business, which I was doing. And slowly I just kept learning that, okay, wait a minute. I'm gonna have to surrender as the demands of being a father took precedence mentally, time-wise, definitely, but also more like mentally, and just the bandwidth that I had to provide my son versus my business, my relationship. And slowly I had to just keep cutting back on my business and what I was doing. And that was hard, right? Because I had this vision, I had this goal I was working towards. But the more I learned about, I love that what you said about the investment of the first, 3, 5 years. The brain grows, 80% in the first 3 years, 90% in the first five, I believe it is. And you never get that time back. Yes, this development's still happening after that. And the more I learned about that and how showing up for our through our for our children, just it was an investment, and I wanted to put it all into to that investment. I stay at home. I'm a stay at home dad. That wasn't the plan. It just kind of fell into that. But it's I wouldn't change it. You couldn't pay me to do anything else, and it just took a lot out of me. So I could have had to cut back on my business. I had to just cut back and more because I know how precious this time is. And also for me, what I've learned is through this surrender is really, changing me. I'm becoming more patient. I'm taking more appreciation for the environment around us and nature, and just the flow, just so my flow of life is so different. And through learning about play, right? Just, some of the readings I've done about how that just shapes our children's world. That's the work of children. I believe it's Peter Gray who says that play is the work of children. Watching your things you post online, and something you posted, really, we could talk about that a little bit later. Really, really, really shaped how I play and show up in the activities we do with my son Santana. So, and just going and getting into his world, we want, I think every parent and most parents want, a child who's mentally healthy, resilient, feels safe so they can go out and explore and live their authentic life, right? And play is one of the most primary ways that develops in the child. And by parent entering that world through that connection, just enhances that experience for their long-term success as an individual.
Oh, you've touched on so many. We'll definitely get into the play stuff too, but just the fact that you said, especially when you have such Now, I don't want to say rigid, but your life goals are just there, and you're aligned with your partner, and you're like, this is where we're heading. And then, yeah, something unexpected happens. And it's a lot of people, especially when it comes to having a child, and it could be whatever situation it is, you see that as maybe a setback, or you fight against it. You go against it and still try to fight to get to that goal that you had before the child. But the fact that you're surrendering, it just opens up a whole other world. You may not have even noticed that you could do so. I think it's great, because when you're fighting that, you're not that that you really got it there with the safety and security and connection. Those first 2 years, 3 years of life, it's just so important to have that with your child. The child needs to be connected to the parent, and you can only do that through interaction, and then there's no better way to do it than play. So it's just this investment that you do. You stop fighting for the future you thought you were going to have, and open it up to something better. But now you're giving your child a chance to have this well-rounded, healthy approach to life later on in the years. So we're going to jump right into the play, because I know that, I think for you was that I and I can never pronounce this properly. I think it's schemas or schemas, but there's some patterns, some play patterns that our kids have from when you're playing with them. They're not even rolling over yet. It's just the way that they interact with the environment, that you could tell what they gravitate to naturally. And from there, you can then find out how their brain is going to work. Can you walk us through when you discovered the schemas and how you can look for that in the play and how that changed for you? Because I really like, I've been doing this for 20 years or more. So for me, I'm just watching kids when I used to be in daycare setting. I'd watch them play, and within 5, 10 minutes, I knew exactly what we needed to change in the room to get this child to really connect with their learning, because it's just instinct, and I would tell the parents, and they'd be like, oh my God, I've never seen this. When we watch our kids play, we're just watching them play. But if you really start paying attention to the little details, it's a whole other world. So can you walk us through that process with with your experience?
So I remember this. This is probably, I don't know, maybe a year ago, year and a half ago. You were posting online about, I say schemas, I don't
Yes,
know.
and
I
then
say
schemas.
schemas and the different childhood schemas. And this is kind of like right when I'm like trying to learn as much as I can. And not that every parent has to do that, just the way my brain works. That's just, I need to make sense of things. So I remember I watched all the different schemas you talked about and I saved them. So I was like, okay. I was like, and I do remember thinking like, well, how in the heck am I going to figure this out? Because it just feels so like, I'm still, this is still all new, right? And so, but I remember that. So fast forward, I don't know, 6 months, 5 months, my son, he has cars, people would get cars, and he would just take the cars, the same cars, on the couch or different places in our home, mostly on the couch. And he would just like line them up and he would just kind of, push them real slow back and forth on the couch. He would do different things, but that was the one thing. We'd just be like, what is he doing? Like what? Like he's not like going all, he's not doing all this. And he just would be pushing them really slow. And I remember I was talking to or talking with ChatGPT. And I was like, yeah, my son does this. Like what is this? Like he's just, he does, it doesn't seem like play, right? I'm not thinking it's play. It seems like, he just goes like, he just takes the car and goes like this and does another one. And it gave me this big breakdown and it mentioned transportation schema. So because, and I would have just completely have overlooked that, but because I saw your videos and I remember that schemas, I was like, oh, that's important. So then I kind of like focused in on that. So I start asking about that. And then through that, I discovered my son's learning schema, or his like primary one was the transportation schema. So then it just completely changed my perspective on his play with these toys because it was, it was very intricate of what the breakdown of what's going on. But I just, okay, this is important. And this is a key. There's all sorts of things happening developmentally. Just him pushing, right? Just him, there's all kind of things going on. And this is also really important. We've learned that it's regulatory form helps him regulate his nervous system. He did it yesterday. You know, we traveled last week and he was, you know, kind of out of sorts a little bit, dysregulated. And so yesterday was just an off day for him. And he knows probably intuitively that's going to calm him down. So he just gets his trucks, he's on the couch, and he still does this all the time. Now, and because we know this is his, so this is how he learns, we've been able to dive into that, right? So it's almost like he has a bunch of cars, which a lot of little boys do, and girls probably, car, different sizes, and he just does different things with them. And so we just leaned into that, and it's almost like they're one big toy with how he uses them. And being able to just get in his world, like even like you said, sometimes it's just like sitting and watching them and like what's going on in his mind, right? When he's just maneuvering them and just pushing back and forth. And I know, and I don't know exactly what, but I know it's extremely rich for him in his mind. And also what my son, he had delayed speech. We weren't really concerned, but he had, you know, he was just a little delayed speech, and we put him in a county program just to be precautious. And, you know, he just, maybe a few months ago, he just overnight, just, you know, he just completely just went just.
Yeah, the complete opposite end.
He's just like talking all the time now. But what we've been able to do is because we know this is his schema. His learning schema, we've been able to incorporate that into like language, like creating a rich language for him.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's what he's curious about. So, you know, it could be a book. You know, I take him to the airport. Again, that's transportation. So and using the language of transportation or vehicles, what he really loves to motivate him to talk more, or just like it's just what he loves. So of course he's going to be more interested in it and want to talk about that.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned that as an example, because it gives such a great visual for people to understand what those schemas are. Because transportation, of course, now we're talking about vehicles and trucks and all of that, but it's not necessary. It's the act of transporting as well, because you mentioned girls,
right?
They may not necessarily be playing with the same toys, but if they're carrying all their stuff in their hands from one room to the other, and you're like, what are you doing? And they're just moving them from the couch to the chair, to your bed, to the you know, whatever. That's also transportation. The kids that have rocks and they're just picking them up, putting them in their pockets and bringing them home. Just the fact of like, not just the actual machinery that transports, but the act of transporting is really a fun. And also when you're saying it, we thought it was just play, right? It's just my son playing with cars. That's typical. But when you get down to their level, if you're sitting on the floor with them, because you have a toddler, you get to see the whole world. You get to see their line of vision, their field of vision. Mm-hmm. And you start, because I know when you were just explaining it, that he's a kinesthetic learner. If he's watching how the car is moving, his brain is watching how the wheels move, if it's going one way or the other way.
Yeah.
And this is like probably before he was two. So you're already thinking, my God. So that's what I know. And I tell people, you have a smart kid. I'm not just saying that to be like, I can see it from the play.
Yeah.
And the regulation, so many times adults trigger a tantrum or a meltdown. Because if your son uses that to soothe himself, to calm himself down, where he has control, because when you're two, you don't have control over your environment. The adults tell you what to do no matter what you want.
Right.
So if it's for him to control, like he has a sense of control over what he wants to do. But if it's regulating him, and if you're in a rush and you're just grabbing all the cars to pack them away because you have to be somewhere and you're running late, you're taking that soothing time, that calm time out, and now you're going to get a full tantrum. So it's that little detail, if you find out about your child, can change your interaction with your child, because now you know, I'm going to give him 5 minutes to, you know, continue, so that we don't have to have a full-on, you know, meltdown.
Yeah, no, yeah, right, exactly. Or, yeah, totally. And, or, Like taking, toys with him where when we go out, right? We make sure a lot of times he has a car with him because it's just comforting, it's soothing, it's regulating. And this is really something that we start doing too. I start taking him to the corner. This is maybe about a year ago because I remember it was cold. It's getting cold now, and I don't like the cold. I start taking him to the corner really, where it's like a roundabout. So it's always a lot of cars and a lot of traffic. There's school buses. And he would love school buses because Will's on the bus. And I kind of just start doing it just to get out the house and to distract him a little bit because it's just being in the house all day and his way for just get out the house. And it's like, okay, this is kind of, this seems kind of interesting to him. But again, and then this is right around the same time I learned about this transfer, his schema. His transportation schema. And again, so I asked ChatGPT about like, so what's going on here? And again, it broke down all the benefits that I would have completely have overlooked and just thought like, okay, he just likes watching cars, right? This isn't a big deal, but it's so developmentally rewarding for him. It was regulating. A lot of times we're like, you know what? He's dysregulated. Let's just go to the corner real quick. And let them sit and watch cars. Again, the language piece we talked about. We play games. We pick now. Before we didn't, but now we like call out different colors, and we're engaged. It's connection, right? It's building attachment. All these different elements. It's like spatial awareness and predictability, and we can just sit there sometimes as long as we've sat there as long as 30, 40 minutes, just sitting in him in his stroller watching cars, and again. That's creating, patient in inhibition, help, the developing inhibition, which is really important for people. So it's just like in this, that completely just shaped a dimension of his experience that, we would never have thought about, but by again, by going into his world and providing him something that he obviously loves, and now we kind of grown to love it. And also, it's a way for me to rest sometimes, because
That's
it's
what I
like,
was gonna
okay, I'm tired.
say.
I can just go now so much because now I have to really interact with him. He wants to interact, but before I would just get along, just me and him at the corner, cars going by, and it's just a kid in a stroller and me in a lawn chair, and we're just sitting watching cars. And like, it's people. Some people will be like, people wave and they see it, and this has been going on for almost a year, 2 to 3 times a week, and it's been great. It's been
It's
great.
crazy.
And
And it's just like, you said that. I was gonna say that, and it's funny that you mentioned it first, but instead of fighting for 30 minutes in the house to try to calm him down on something that you could just go outside and do and get some fresh air and get that vocabulary going. It's you're now able to enjoy as a father or as a parent, it works for any parent to actually be there present with your child and create that bond. I think it's such a great and again, 30 minutes for a toddler or like a baby at this point, if he was what 2 years old maybe or not even 2 yet when you started doing that. It again, it shows that even if you do have an attention deficit, if you're attention deficit, if you really like something, you're gonna sit down and take the time to learn more, right? It's that those hyper focuses where I work with the children with ADHD and ADD, and it's just again, if you give them something that they really like, they are gonna sit there for 30 minutes, an hour, and explore that world. So you're making it instead of fighting with them to talk about like learning colors with yellow squares and red triangles, and now you have it with cars, and it's just easy, and you're connecting, and you're having fun, and you're not the police. I just love the fact that you're living it, and I'm thinking of sitting there like rooting for her, going, "Yes, you got this. It's
There,
going to be
thank you.
so much easier when they're in the school, in learning the traditional way, or it's a lot easier."
Yeah, no, totally. It's been so, yeah. And I would have never have thought like this. Just I would have never thought this would have been part of the experience, and it's leaning into curiosity. For myself, just curiosity about his world and allowing him to lean into his, cultivating that environment where he can lean into his curiosity. Because I've heard someone, even I've heard it said, and I'm sure you know this as an educator, true learning is curiosity, right? And by providing, okay, this is what he's curious about, like you said, they're going to be focused, right? It's going to be, that's where his attention is going to be. We don't teach numbers, we don't teach colors, like from like traditionally, like what's this color and what's this number? But he knows colors and he knows numbers, because when we're like, that color, that car is white, that car is blue, one car, two car, three car. So just in daily life, by saying the numbers and colors, he's learning colors and numbers, just naturally through curiosity. And yeah, I wish all, like every parent, like you said, we're so, our environment, our system has, we have this goal, career goals, and whatever it might be, and we resist the play, and it can be tiring. It can be, it can be hard, and like how, but the kids will show you, like that you just put whatever in front of them and just let them take the lead. And what I always tell myself, especially, I said just, I think I shared this with you before. I'm kind of like a big kid, so I kind of, it's kind of easy for me to go there. It's a little easy for me. Sometimes my partner, his mother, Ruth, sometimes just like, you're having fun with that, aren't you? I was like, I kind of am, but days I'm tired, and but I just go back to, this is shaping who he is and his future, right? It's that investment, and I'm like, okay, this is an investment, right, into his future. And I'll share this really quick. This is really helpful for me about the surrendering phase. And it wasn't about play, it was about nurture. But it still relates. And it was about how, again, our society has kind of conditioned us to, we have to always be doing, right? We have, and I still struggle with this. We have to have a tangible goal, something we're accomplishing each day, each hour, right? And for me, I'm home with a toddler who's 6 months, a year. It's like, okay, what am I? This is where I want to be, but I still have that instinct. So what am I okay, what am I accomplishing? Okay, I have to accomplish something. And children, 1 to 3, on birth to three, are developing, I'm sure people have heard this, 1 million neurons a second, which is hard to fathom, right? And your interactions with them are shaping who they are, or shaping their world, shaping how they feel about themselves inside. So you're doing something, right? Like when you're there, focused, present with them, you're doing something. You just don't see it. And what you're doing, I believe, is the most important work in the world.
No, thank you. It is fun. But I'm a big kid too, so to me it doesn't feel like work. I'm just playing, and and that's the way it should be. That's the way I see it. It should be. I just You feel lighter. It's hard to explain, and I'm sure everybody feels different, but I would have a really tough day running a daycare or running a school, or that kind of setting is very stressful. There's a lot of policies and a lot of administration side of it that are contradictory. So you have to manage that. You have to keep little human beings alive. So it's really stressful. But when it was too much, I would just say, okay, I just go into the toddler room or the preschool room, and then just go on the car, on the rug with them, and then on the floor and roll, or go outside and play tag. And I would come back and I was ready for whatever boring task I had to do. But we're so conditioned to be performance based that, even though, I mean, you've made the conscious choice that this is my investment, or this is what I need to be working on right now. But there must be a lot of people in your environment that are just like, well, okay, so when are you going back to work? When are you going back? When are you doing this? When are you do and you're like, this is work.
This is the
This is the
work.
most important work that you can do. Do you find in all of this, I always like to ask parents this question, is observing your child that way through play, because you're really doing the free play thing here. It's not structured. You can kind of guide them towards something, but you let them in. Do you find that you learn more about yourself And you're just thinking, oh, that's why I was struggling, or this is why it was hard for me as a child. Do you find that you're rediscovering yourself
Oh,
through this play?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. I think it's impossible for me. It's impossible not to.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember. I just said something this morning or yesterday to my partner about kind of like that. There's always stuff coming up about like, yeah, this kind of play or that play or just 100%. I'm trying to think of some examples, but it has been, you know, just conversations with my parents about, you know, how they parented and what would they change. And my parents are great, you know, like, and I'm sure my son Santana is going to look back and be like, oh, okay, I wish, you know, this could have been different or what have you. But this has been a definitely a growth season by reflecting on my childhood and what that was like, just remembering different things I did with my friends and my cousins. And yeah, it has been very, very eye-opening.
Yeah, I find that too. And that's the comments I get with a lot of the parents that I work with. Even with my book, when I wrote it, I was really just to help parents to help their kids. But the initial feedback I had was it allowed me to see myself for who I was and not for the image everybody was kind of projecting on me. So that's why I like to
Yeah.
ask that, like, what are you learning about yourself or even your partner? You can extend that to your family and really see. I understand my mother more now because my mom was also a nomad, and she was always very playful. I remember growing up, she just loved to play and joke around, but she was had a very rigid upbringing. So of course that was a struggle for her. And again, a single mother raising two daughters, she couldn't be nomad as much as she would have wanted to. So she joined the army. She could still
Oh,
move around. It's not
you're
quite the
right.
same setting, but so I could see now that she's older, she can actually be who she wants to be. And it's fun that I get to play with my, I couldn't play with my mom when she was a captain in the army, but I can play with her now. And it's so fun to see that side of her where I've heard her like those guttural belly laughs recently. We've had some incidents, I guess I could say, where it's just like we were both like freaking out, and she just started laughing. I've never heard my mom laugh like that. I was like,
That's funny.
she has a heart condition. I'm like, are you okay? Like, is this still laughing? Are you dying right now? And she's
That's
just
awesome.
laughing even harder. So it's a great thing for us as parents too, to be able to discover our children's world like that, so we can rediscover ours. I think it's so 100%.
100%. Yeah,
Yeah.
100%. And something I want to touch on just something really quick. You said this is like I've come to believe in your title of your book. This is how we can change the world. Like, and it's like literally if through play with our kids, just like just even those first few years by just connecting, like that being, I know it's hard because we're not, that's not what's mainstream. That's not what, you know, we're taught. But if we can like make it about our children, you know, through play, through nurture, just connecting with them and making sure they're safe. It's literally how we change the world.
It
It's
is.
how we change and make the world a better place. It really is.
It's one child at a time, and it starts with your child. And the thing is, when you focus on that, because we can't change, we start looking at the world and we're like, oh, what's the point? There's nothing we can do. But just to spend that little time to create these safe spaces and these moments of connection, our children bring that with them into adulthood, where now they are more compassionate and more, creative. They collaborate more. They're more empathic. My goodness, my English is not working today. But so that becomes exponential because everybody they're in contact with, they're not having a positive interaction as opposed to a negative, and it does make. It makes completely. It's not something that we will not get to see the changed world, but that's our legacy. If we can focus on our children first, They bring the, you know, if you work with, that was my, before I worked with on my own children, I was working with other people's children. It was just like, we're sending them home and they will get to show their parents how it could be done differently. And then it changes the whole community, right? Because we pay more attention to the kids and we'll listen. Like you said earlier, we're stuck in our ways. So our children kind of force us to look at things differently. And so it opens us up to show up better for everybody. So I like that. Yeah. It's that
I'll just
community.
close with this, and we kind of touched on it, but for me, again, I didn't know. I knew I didn't want to. Again, my parents were great, but I just knew there are certain aspects of their how I was parented that I wasn't going to parent it. I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know what that looked like. I was kind of scared. I was like, what? I don't know. I don't have experience with children or babies, and I just kind of like learned and fell in it, and then I learned about. I knew there was child development, but I didn't really know what that meant. I didn't know what that entailed. But I learned that, wait a minute, for the last few decades, they've been studying children, how their brains work, and the environment that and environments that build a resilient, mentally healthy, compassionate, kind. For the, it's not, you can't guarantee, but a more the more likelihood of that outcome, we'll say that. How come I was like, how come I don't know this?
I
That
know.
was my, I was like, how come everyone doesn't know this? And what I would encourage every parent to do, right? If you watch this, write down the goals you have for your child, like what kind of person you want them to be, right? And I imagine again, it will be, just these kind, compassionate, successful, resilient, authentic. There's kind of a recipe for that to some extent. There's a general recipe. Every child's different. My child's highly sensitive, so that's a completely different dynamic. Again, people don't, I didn't know about that. Now I'm learning about that. That's a whole different circumstances you have to be aware of. But you can, it's just, to me, it's just like you have a knowledge, people like Danielle who share their wisdom, and you can really, this is how we change the world. And you can really, the outcome that you want for your child, you can really increase the likelihood that you'll get there. They'll get there.
And you even mentioned it. Even this is where I love working with AI in that sense. The chat is there for you to give you answers if you're not sure where to start, where to look. It will even recommend the books that you need for your specific needs. So already, I'm not saying to not connect with humans. You need to connect with humans when it comes to parenting. But if you're really stuck and not sure where to go, or if I find, and this is why I wanted to write my book, was everything is so mainstream and trendy that you're not sure if that's actually going to, first of all, you've talked about this as well, is leading, raising your children through your values. That is so important, but what do you want for your kids? Like you just said, write it down. How do you want to show up as a parent? That's also important, because there's a lot of times that we'll get in reactive because our kids will trigger us all the time. They're showing us, they're not out to get us. They're not out to get us at all. They're just showing us where we need to heal. So, what's triggering you? What is triggering you? And what is your child bringing out of you that you're not too proud of, where you're like, oh, I don't like how I showed up this way. But if you can note how you actually want to show up and how you want to interact with your child, then you're going to be able to see where you need that support. And then that's when you can go and get it. I think you touch on a very important point there, that the resources are out there, and no, we're not taught this. And yes, we should be taught this, because most of us, we think of child development, we're thinking of the physical development. Are they tall enough? Are they gaining enough weight? Are they, can they
The
count?
milestones.
Can they hold scissors? Are they losing their teeth? You're not thinking about the emotional. You're not thinking about everything else that's going on in internally. So it's important to get to know. And how, it's so hard, because I've been through it. When you're working crazy hours, you're thinking about a million and one other things. You're dealing with your own stuff to say, well, do I really have the time and energy to go and search I don't even know where to look in this ocean
Yeah.
of information. So yeah, there's some sources, the resources there. And you, with your posts and talking about your everyday with Santana, you're helping parents see how it doesn't have to be complicated. It's not easy, but the simple things like car watching, like how cool is
Yeah,
that?
like right, like yeah, it's just like yeah, it's just like wow, like that. It's just been like that. That alone has been is again, it's given me the opportunity, like I said, to rest, but just knowing the to connect, right? And now, you know, because I, you know, before I could just kind of like rest and you know, I'd be on my phone while he's just watching cars, but now he's a little older, he's talking, so he wants me to interact, which again has helped me disconnect from my phone, right? Because that's something I want to do, but like I'm addicted. So it's forced me to, okay, this is something I want to do, right? Like disconnect from my phone. So I have to. And again, it's just, yeah, it's just so being able to create that space with him and connect, it's been yeah, that's just a those are that's something that I can't wait to talk to him about, right? And just share how we used to go to the corner and he had me out in the cold.
That's right. The things that kids, and this is how you make the world a better place. They're having us go out, Nicole. I like the cold. I'm from the north, so
Yeah.
that's part of my everyday, but
No.
they're making us do things that we don't necessarily want to do. And so they're kind of forcing us to become better people,
100%.
because
100%.
we want that for them. We want a better world for them. So I
Yeah,
think it's great that
100%.
you
Yeah,
great that you can.
I just went because again, I cannot iterate enough how much I don't like being in the cold. But so and it's funny, yesterday I said to his mom, I said, you know, because I wanted to get him outside. I wanted to go outside with him because he was again like a little dysregulated and outdoors is just like the best environment for children. So for a lot of different reasons. So I was like, I've never been more excited to go out in the cold. You know, I've never been more eager to go out in the cold because I know how beneficial it is for him. And I bought all this, you know, I just bought some hot cocoa the other day just because I know I'm gonna be outside. It's getting colder here, and I know I'm gonna be outside. So I need to I bought a new a fleece shirt to really keep me warm because I know I'm gonna be outside because I know how beneficial it is for him and I see it when I'm out there with him.
Yeah, and it's beneficial for him to see that you're not limited by your environment either.
Right.
That's great.
And it's making me better, right? It's pushing me to, you know, adjust and adapt.
That's why I like the cold. You can always add more layers. See,
Yes.
I have a hard time because where I'm from, there's winter 9, 10 months out of the year. So
Right.
it's the heat that I'll adapt. It takes me a few days, but
Yeah.
it's the heat because you can only take so many layers off. Like it's just like,
Right,
yeah, I gotta
yeah.
can we get some fresh air? So this is where I get the ice, the pool that I'll do because you can help. But yeah, it's
Yeah.
funny that you keep mentioning you don't like the cold. I just realized that all the countries you went through with your humanitarian work was never a cold country.
No. No. No.
I've never seen
No.
you up north.
No. No. It's like yeah, we made like in the come the winter, we always would make sure we had a trip planned to South America or somewhere for sure.
That's all right. I could talk to you all day, but I did want to ask you before we wrap up as well
Sure.
is first of all, what's next? But also in terms of, because there's so many mixed feelings about this, but in terms of education, how do you see yourself and Ruthie, your partner, how do you see education, traditional homeschooling, a hybrid of both? How do you see that for where you are now? This may change in the next couple of years, but
Sure.
how do you see that, knowing all the work that you've done right now with play and learning how Santana learns? What are your thoughts on this? You don't need to get personal about it, but just what your thoughts are
Sure.
and how
Yeah.
you
I could
take from this.
share a little bit. I know I'll say as of today, right now, I will probably homeschool him. I just kind of, even before I had a kid, I said, you know what? I think I would want to homeschool my child just because of my school experience. And knowing, you know, every kid, every system, every school is different, but my experience, the influence that other kids can had on me just I would have been better. I feel like I would have been better off not having that influence. Let me say that. So just knowing that impact, I was just kind of like, yeah, I don't know if I would want to put, have like allowing others to have that much influence on my child. That was before I had a child. Since then, I've learned more about education as far as how human beings biologically learn best, how we develop through evolution, how we learn for probably 99.9% of human existence, or 99%, how we evolve to learn. So based on what I learned from that, and what some of the what the statistics say about homeschooling, I think a lot of misconception, especially about the social piece. I feel like I think there's some misconception. So since then, just learning those different features of human beings and homeschooling, I'll probably homeschool. And again, I mentioned my son is highly sensitive, so putting him in that environment probably would not be best for him.
That sometimes it could be it won't be pr as productive because of the environment setting. It can get pretty chaotic in school settings, and I completely understand that. Especially in the last 5 years or so, I find that homeschooling is no longer an isolated thing, because you used to think that these are kids that were just isolated from the outside world, and parents were stuck, with the becoming teachers all of a sudden. But it's really not, it doesn't have to be that way. And so there are so many outlets. So you've even talked about those friends that you've made along the way, that the kids have made along the way, that there is still room for social interaction, because that's very important. But at least you can adapt it to your child's needs and the way your child is, as opposed to being forced into this almost like hunter games,
No,
the Hunger
exactly. And
Games.
I think people, and I think people think, and again, me too, I didn't know. I've come to learn what homeschooling looks a certain kind of way. There's a lot of things that fall under the umbrella of homeschooling. Some people do like same curriculum, same structure as school. Something called unschooling that I learned about. There's just some people do hybrids. Some kids take class out of school and they go co-op and they do some things at home. And some people travel through educating their kids through travel. There's a whole lot of different ways. And this is really important. I believe this is really important that people learn different, right? Back to the schemas.
That's it.
So, every people learn different. And I'll just say people learn different. And the education system teaches one way. I'll just say that.
Exactly. You have to learn the way they teach, as opposed to learning the or them teaching the way that they learn. And I'm working on that too. It's not it doesn't require more work to change that in the school settings. But the way it's set up right now, there are more and more people that are leaning towards not sending their kids to school. There's a safety issue there as well, more and more. I mean, you hear it in the States all the time. I'm in Canada, so we get a whole other vision of what American schools are, but it's the same everywhere. Schools are just not safe, both mentally, psychologically, and physically. So it's, yeah, that's why I was just kind of curious to see what, now that you understand it, because a lot of times parents don't want to send their kids to school, but they feel like they have to because they don't know. They was like, well, I can't teach that. I can't teach the math. I can't, but there's so much more to it than just the ABCs and the 1, 2, 3s, that it's important to have these conversations to say you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Everything is there. You can actually download the curriculum in whatever state you're in, or in the provinces where I am. It breaks it all down, what the learning objectives are, and then you can incorporate that into actual play. Yeah, there's so many things that you could do.
So
So
many.
I was curious to know.
It's so many. It's almost I can and I get it. It's because it's over. It can be probably overwhelming. Like, where do I start? But that's when, that's where ChatGPT or Claude, an AI, can come in. So, can really change the game of how people broach, homeschooling, play, their child, you know, like you can ask your child, like, this is what I did. Like, my child does this. What does this mean? It completely would just open their eyes.
And the community also helps a lot. You know, the public libraries, the community centers, there's so many organizations out there that are actually out there to give those resources. We just don't think of going to them, or we don't think it's available to us, but it is. So just to broaden the horizon, that we do need that community to support. It's interesting. I love having these kind of conversations so that parents, if you're stuck to like a 60-hour week, a work week, you're not thinking of, okay, my kid has to learn 6 hours a day. How am I going to do this when I'm working 10 hours a day? So yeah, there's ways around it that you, first of all, your child, if it's done the way that they learn, they won't need 6 hours a day to
Right. They
learn.
don't, yeah, that's
They
yeah.
don't need it, so they can learn
No.
other life skills with you in the process. So it's very interesting. But what's next for you? Like, what's up? Anything new coming up? You're just kind of still in it. It's hard to tell, but
Sure,
it's
yeah, no.
okay. Any
I will
plans?
share this 'cause this is something I was literally just if this is helpful for any parent watching, and since we're on the topic of education, because this is something I just learned. I knew, but I kind of delved into it a little bit last week. Again, it's a misconception. It's about reading, right? Is you know, we want to get our kids start reading really early because that will increase their likelihood of success in school. And that's just not true. You know, it's just not true. And every kid is different. Now, kids can learn, you know, I know you know this, and kids can learn, they'll learn to read, you know, you can teach them, but it's just not really when they're mentally ready or the develop, they're literally the biological, you know, mental mechanisms haven't fully developed yet that enable us to learn to read easily and fluently with a lot of curiosity. And it really doesn't happen till like, I think 6 or 7. Really, when they're ready, and sometimes it could be even later. And this is the thing, and I know it's hard, but it's okay if it's like really, it's okay. And when you just, you know, you hear stories about maybe people who were homeschooled, like I didn't learn to read till I was 7 or 8, and then that, by all the times I was 12, you know, by the times I was 14, I was taking college level courses. You
I
know,
know.
it's just we're just not. We just don't have the right information. There's a lot of things that the system doesn't make us privy to.
And this is where, because a lot of the times we're kind of bombarded with that as new parents, that your child should know the alphabet. They should be able to count to 100 before they even start school. In Canada, you could start as early as 3. You start kindergarten at 3 or 4. But you're right. It's not teaching your children how to read. It's the vocabulary. How many words do they know, and how many ways do they know how to combine those words to create sentences? That's what teaches them how to read. So those first 3 years, you shouldn't be forcing a book. Reading is important, but it's how to teach them the vocabulary. This happens with interactions. You sitting down next to him at the roundabout talking about cars. That's how they learn to read, because now he has more vocabulary in his repertoire, and they can figure it out. But I've lived this personally myself with my kids. Kids, if they're learning to read, my son could read me the books that we would read all the time when he was 2, and people would be like, "Oh, he's reading at 2." No, he memorized it at 2. He's
That's what
not
my that's what he
reading.
does,
He
right?
memorized it. He had a cousin that people were just like, "Oh, he's a genius. He could read parts of the Bible when he was 3." It was like, "No, he memorized it. He's not reading." So it's that little difference there. And you know, my son, who was reading quote unquote his story, the books to me when he was 2, turns out he has a form of dyslexia where he couldn't read. Once he went into school, he couldn't read anymore. Well, he could, but just not the way that the traditional way. So that's when it kind of clicked on me to be like, oh, he wasn't reading, he was memorizing. So that, yeah, we need to change that narrative about child education. And the most important thing for reading and writing is to know words. And if we're not talking with our kids, they're not developing those words. So it's that's
Yeah,
something that we
so
see now with the screens. You mentioned the screens earlier. And I just had an episode this week come out on our screen addictions. We can't address our kids' addictions if we're not addressing ours. So it's so important. But play, just keep playing. You're gonna
Just
naturally
play.
talk to your child, have fun with it, and play is just as beneficial for you as it is. I started pushing play when they brought in play therapy, and I that boiled my blood. And it is necessary. I'm not, disregarding that form of therapy at all, but I'm thinking now we're institutionalizing play. That's the whole opposite of play, right? So that got to me. But if we got to that, where we need to pay a clinic to teach our children how to play, because now we have generations of parents who don't know how to play. And that's alarming. We have, we're dealing with multiple generations who have forgotten how to play. Now, it doesn't mean it has to be like back in our day where we're just running feral, it was like natural selection was at play there. But we have to find that balance. There's got to be a medium somewhere where we're not,
It has
it's
to be.
no longer a clinical
It
approach
has to
to
be.
play. It has
It
to
has
come
to be.
naturally. So the hearing parents like you talk about their experiences is so important. So I really do appreciate you sharing that with us.
I'll share this. I saw I think it was your newsletter, a few maybe a couple months ago, and I was like, hey Danielle, I would love to come on your podcast to talk about this, because it's something that's become so pa I've been just become so passionate about. And just if I can just share my experience as I continue to learn, if that would be helpful to any parents, that might feel, I don't know a lot of parents who kind of take this approach, that we decided to take. So if just hearing another parent who's in it and just really again focused on play and investing, sacrificing even, to some extent, for their child, if that's helpful, I would love to, I wanted to come and just talk about it.
That was very, no, I really do appreciate you coming up, and I love that you keep sharing your story as well. And so I do invite people to, if you want, the people to follow you on social media to see your thoughts, because you do share your thoughts on how it is to be raising Santana, and I love it. And yeah, it's important, because it, like you said, I don't see it as a sacrifice, but I know what you mean. And it's an investment. If you don't invest the time now, you're going to be investing a lot more time later, and it's going to be longer. So you might as well get it, nip it in the bud right away in those first 3, 5 years. It's so important.
Exactly. You nailed it. You nailed it.
It's a short-term investment for a long-term benefit. And are you okay with sharing your social media if people want to get in touch with you and just
Sure.
see?
My Instagram is, oh, actually, I'm off Instagram and Facebook now. Just a break, but it'll be by the time this airs, I'll be back. So I am Ricardo Wilkins on Instagram and just Ricardo.Wilkins on Facebook. And I'm on LinkedIn too, Ricardo Wilkins there. So that's where you can find me. And you asked what's next for me also. I'll just share, just really being a dad, just being a dad and just kind of surrendering. I've just learned this is that the season for me is really a season for my growth and learning just as much as my son. So I'm just kind of, seeing where it takes me, and
That's
just
true.
trying to stay alive in the process, not try to break.
That's true. Yeah, I know that feeling. But it's the best job ever, and that's what I appreciate. I advocate a
Yes,
lot for
100.
fathers. I advocate a lot because fathers don't get the credit they deserve. I find generally we just kind of put everything on the mother, but the father's presence is so important. So we need to be supporting the dads too. And we also have, I guess we should mention that too. We collaborated on a journal for fathers. So because you mentioned, write down what do you want for your child? How do you want to show up for your child? What support do you need? So it's called The Grateful Dad. It's available on Amazon. I don't have a hard copy, so I can't show it, but if you look on Amazon, The Grateful Dad, you'll see Ricardo Wilkins and myself. And I just appreciate you putting in your input, because what better person to to say, what should we be looking at than the dad that's going through it right now? I think it's great.
Yeah, no, thank you. I appreciate that. And to your point, like we need to, highlight dads more and speak to dad. I feel like speak to dads more, because a lot of the people in this realm, on social media, they're talking to the mothers. And I get why. It's typically the mothers that are doing, at home, are doing the primary caregiving. But there's dads out here too. And really, dads need to be educated on all these facets of child development, because just our system, or it's a patriarch system. It's a patriarch system where men are, a lot, run a lot of the companies, own a lot of the companies, and a lot of so more men that are educated about what's best for children, we can. I don't want to get on the whole thing, but policies can start changing, and just really shift the system to benefit ultimately everybody. So we,
Or
I feel like
just
we should definitely people should talk to just the parents a little bit more, because it's a lot of single dad. And I'll get emails like, as a mom, as a this, as a mother,
But you should also be as a father. There's so many fathers who want to be, but they just don't know where to go, or they're just kind of pushed aside and said, "Oh, no, let don't worry about it." But no, the father should be worrying about it too. And I think
100%.
it could start with just giving the space for the dads to be present in their kids' life and to be there, and that their input is just as important as anybody else, and to educate them. Yeah, if we, we have to get the dads prepared for what's out there and how they can show up for their kids. I think it's important,
100%.
as
100%.
opposed to just being tossed aside and say, "Yeah, I don't know, let the woman handle this." No, the statistics are there, the research is there to have the father figure, and is important for a child, and for the father. It is also for that connection. So, yeah,
100%.
need to get those conversations going as well, to just let the parent, let the dads in, because there's so many dads out there.
100%. 100%. It's a communal, it's a parent, it's a if you're, a dual family home or whatever the case may be. It's a community. It's just a community. Grandparents. I can go.
Aunties,
We can
uncles.
go on
We
and
can
on
go on.
about this.
People
But
have a good glimpse of how our conversations go when we get together and start talking. We cover everything. So I do really appreciate that. I know you've mentioned a lot of things, but is there like parting words? Anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
Just children are the future, let's enter their worlds, connect. It can change their outcome, and it can change us. 100.
Yeah, it changes us for the better too, I think. So that's great. Thank you so much for sharing. I could keep you all day, but we're gonna wrap it up. And I'll put the information as well. If people have questions, if dads have questions for you, and they can take that on, I think it would be great. But thank you so much for coming on. Anytime you want to come back on and talk about the new world you've discovered with Zenjan, I think that'd be great. I do appreciate it. So
Great.
I'll leave you. Thank you again
Thank you,
for coming
Danielle.
on. And for everybody watching, don't forget to go check out the Grateful Dad journal. It is important to help dads kind of see, how do I want to show up as a dad? You don't necessarily have to be just the provider. It could be something of, how do I show up for my child, and does my child need from me? And don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe to whichever channel you're listening or watching from. And until next time, stay safe, stay awesome, and we'll talk soon.